Talking about some practical themes from Paul's letter of joy. One of the things that I need to mention that I received a letter from Fried Harman recently, and they're going to be honoring John Dale at the Bible lectureship in February with a benefit. It's not a benefit, it's a just where they honor him, and it is, I think, $7 to $10 a ticket for the meal and going and seeing that. And anyways, they have mailed out a letter to churches in West Kentucky saying that they wanted us to be able, usually those all fill up, and they wanted us to be able to know, and if we would like to have a group go for that, or if we'd like to have individuals go to get our tickets early, and that we could do that, and there was even some group rates. So I've said all that to say this. It's going to be on Tuesday night, first full week of February. If you have a close relationship with John Dale, and appreciate, I know many of us have appreciated his work through the years, and you'd like to go to that, let me know, and we will try to make that happen and get make sure you can get tickets for that. And so they do that each year. They honor a different person worthy of such honor, and John Dale certainly is worthy of such an honor. And so if you have an interest in that, let me know. Paul's Guide to Joy. We're thinking this evening about the topic of conflict. And I think it's appropriate that on my 17th anniversary that I give a lesson on conflict, because, you know, not that Amanda and I have had any over 17 years, but there's just a few lessons I wanted her to know and think about conflict this evening. You know, I think anybody, those couples that say, well, we lived together so many years and we never had an argument. Well, did you ever speak to each other? Did you live in the same house? If you are going to exist in relationship, you're going to have differences of opinions, differences of thought, and conflict is where opportunity often comes from, and where we are able to grow in closeness and intimacy with one another. And conflict is certainly a part of what it is to be a Christian as well. And one of the things that I think many of you may even know about me is that I'm really not someone who likes conflict or tension. I don't like when there's a white elephant in the room that nobody's really talking about, and I don't like when there's when that's certainly been exposed and people are talking about it and there's a lot of conflict going on. And I try to, whenever there is conflict, my natural desire is to try to get that taken care of, to try to, you know, work that out and try to get it where things are patched back together. And in fact, sometimes that can be bad, and we call that in different terms like a pleaser, someone who wants to avoid conflict. And sometimes that can be bad, to try to always avoid conflict. And some of you are the same way. But there's other people who are right on the opposite extreme. They, like, live with conflict. I mean, they enter a room, and the room has got plenty of peace, and it's like as soon as they enter, they're starting to pick on somebody, they're starting to aggravate somebody, they create conflict. And there's some families that this is the way they exist. When there is no drama, they think, well, there's something wrong, so they create some drama. They live in a constant state of turmoil and conflict, so that it always becomes the norm for that family to have some type of drama, some type of conflict going on. And if there's not some, then the family feels like, subconsciously, well, things aren't right, and maybe even someone doesn't love me, and so they create more conflict and tension. But that's how people exist. And as you think about that, we need to understand a few things about conflict before we look to Philippians. First of all, as you think about conflict, we need to understand that as Christians, the gospel will bring conflict. In Matthew chapter 10, 32 through 33, Jesus is talking about this concept, and he says, "So everyone who acknowledges me before men, I will also acknowledge or confess him before my Father who is in heaven. But whoever denies me before men, him will I deny before my Father who is in heaven. Do not think that I have come to bring peace on earth." It kind of doesn't make a real good Christmas song. But that's what Jesus said. Of course, he did say in other places he came to bring peace on earth. But here he says, I did not come to bring peace on earth. I have not come to bring peace, but a sword. For I have come to set a man against his father, a daughter against her mother, a daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law, and a person's enemies will be those of his own household. For whoever loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. Whoever loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. Whoever does not take his cross and follow me is not worthy of me. Whoever finds his life will lose it, and whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. We often think that being Christians means we have to get along with everybody. We have to be that pleasing personality I talked about earlier. But what we need to realize is that Jesus himself was not that. He came and brought a sword. He had conflict. In fact, he says that he's going to cause conflict even within our own families. And Jesus caused conflict in his own family. If you remember, his brothers did not believe in him. And he, in fact, at one time is going to have conflict with his mothers and his brothers when they come to visit him and he's out doing his ministry. And Jesus will say, in a kind of controversial statement at the time, certainly, he says, those who do the will of God are my mother and my brothers and my sisters. Teaching the spiritual family of God. And so there's conflict. And we need to realize that when we share the gospel with someone, and you tell someone about how to become a Christian, that's going to change that relationship. And if they choose to accept that, there's going to be a close bond. But if they choose to reject that, it creates a level of tension and conflict in that relationship, doesn't it? Things are different from that point forward. And you can be friends, you can be, you know, you often will still associate with one another, but there's still a level of spiritual conflict that exists there rather than spiritual unity. And so conflict is something that is going to come in our world, and we talk about how Christians should bring conflict in this society. But let me say something else about conflict. The early church had lots of conflict. We sometimes may get discouraged in the church today because there's a lot of conflict at times. People that have conflict over doctrine, and there's personality conflicts, and there's preacher conflicts, and there's building conflicts, there's school conflicts. People get, you know, all uptight about their Christian school, and there's a lot of arguments that can go about that. And so there's all kinds of these conflicts. We need to know that the early church had a lot of conflict too. They did. Think about and we can't chase down all these scriptures, but those of you who have a good understanding of the New Testament, you'll understand that one of the big controversies of the New Testament, of the early church, was the controversy over the issue of binding the old law and the new Gentile Christians accepting the Jewish custom of circumcision. That doesn't cause any issue here tonight for us. But in the first century, these churches that Paul were converting and establishing, these Jewish believers had a hard time with these believers, these pagans, were pagans that now are Christians, not accepting circumcision and the old law customs. They didn't keep the Sabbath. They didn't care about all those festivals. And they weren't circumcised. That caused a lot of conflict. You can read about that in Acts chapter 15. It caused what we consider a council or a meeting between the elders at Jerusalem, Paul and Barnabas, Peter and James. They all had to get together to deal with this conflict. But later on in Acts chapter 15, after they deal with the conflict of the big issue in the overall broad church of circumcision, then they have a conflict between two of the leading preachers of the day. Paul, the great missionary, and his young protege, John Mark. And Barnabas and Paul got into it over the issue of whether John Mark could travel with them or not. And so it caused a split between Paul and Barnabas over the issue of Mark, because Mark, it seems, had left them on an earlier mission trip and had not been faithful to his duties, and Paul didn't want to take him again. So what happens is they split up and go separate ways. Paul takes Titus, and Barnabas takes John Mark. The early church had a lot of conflicts. But notice also, Paul had lots of conflict. I've already mentioned the issue with Barnabas. He had conflict with Rome. He had conflict with the Sadducees and the Pharisees. these Judaizing teachers. And that leads us back to the book of Philippians. Because Philippians is a book that's all about rejoicing. And it's about, you know, this joy in the Lord. And yet here in the book of Philippians, there's conflict. And we see that we can still have joy despite conflict. Look to chapter 1, verses 15 and 17. Paul talks about conflict here. He says, "Some indeed preach Christ from envy and rivalry, but others from goodwill. The latter do it out of love, knowing that I am put here for the defense of the gospel. The former proclaim Christ out of selfish ambition, not sincerely, but thinking to afflict me in my imprisonment." Notice that Paul's talking about while he's in prison, these other preachers have taken upon it themselves because of selfish ambition, because of rivalry, because of other reasons, dissension. And they've gone out and preached and tried to gain the recognition. They've tried to gain some of the, we might say, the notice, the popularity of Paul while he's in prison. Kind of to take his place. That's a conflict, isn't it? A conflict that they had with Paul of rivalry, being jealous, out of envy, out of selfishness. Conflict between preachers. And of course, that can be a common thing in our world today. But notice also in chapter 1, 19 through 22, Paul had conflict between the authorities. And of course, preachers, we talked about, that could be, you know, Christians as well, you know, conflict there. But in 19 and 20, we see Paul had conflict with the Roman authorities. "For I know that through your prayers and the help of the Spirit of Jesus Christ, this will turn out for my deliverance." Well, what is Paul talking about? He's in prison because of his faith, of preaching Jesus, being accused of being an insurrectionist, of causing problems in the Roman government by disturbing the peace. And he has appealed his case, and he's now waiting for his trial to go before Caesar. Well, that's conflict. Conflict with the Roman authorities. He says, verse 20, "It is my eager expectation and hope that I will not at all be ashamed, but that with full courage, now as always in Christ, will be honored in my body, whether by life or by death." Paul had a lot of fear about his testimony before Caesar and all these trials. You can read about those from Acts chapter 20 through Acts 28 in Paul's long journey to Rome, and about how he went through all these trials. But then in chapter 2, verses 1 through 2, you read about conflicts within the church. So if there is any encouragement in Christ, any comfort from love, any participation in the Spirit, any affliction, any sympathy, complete my joy by being of the same mind, having the same love, and being in full accord and of one mind. Do nothing, verse 3, do nothing out of selfish ambition or conceit, but in humility count others more significant than yourselves. Now, why did Paul tell them that? He told them that because there was conflict in the church. They were struggling to be of the same mind. They were struggling to have the same love. And they were doing things out of selfish ambition. Now, that was a problem for them, and it's a problem for us. There were conflict amongst Christians. Now, in chapter 4, you wouldn't want to be these ladies because they have gone down in Holy Scripture as having a conflict. Paul calls out in chapter 4, verse 2, "I entreat Euodia and I entreat Syntyche to agree in the Lord." Some people think that chapter 2, this admonition to be of the same love, is really about the factions that have developed about around these two ladies and their division that they have. That Euodia and Syntyche kind of represent different factions or parties in the church that people have allied themselves. Well, I'm on Euodia's side, or I'm on Syntyche's side, and it's called this division in the church. And so he says, "I entreat these two ladies." And it's like Paul puts this in chapter 4 because he spends the first three chapters giving an example and pleading with these laying down the foundation. So when he gets to chapter 4, he says, now I want to really tell you what I really wrote to tell you about. And that is Euodia and Syntyche and all those people who are following them. You need to get in line. You need to start agreeing. So Christians have conflict. And so we see that. And then finally, in chapter 3, verses 2 through 11, in verses 18 through 21, there is conflict with false teachers. So there's conflict within the church of Christians, but there's also conflict on the outside with false teachers who are teaching wrong things. Now, in the book of Philippians, it involves these men who are teaching what I was talking about earlier, the issue of binding circumcision in the old law. He says in verse 2, look out for the dogs. Look out for the evildoers. Look out for those who mutilate the flesh. That's a reference to circumcision. For we are those circumcision who worship by the Spirit of God and glory in Christ Jesus and put no confidence in the flesh. He goes on and talks about that, and because of time, we won't look at all those references. I do want to skip down to verse 18. So he says, for many of whom I have often told you and now tell you with tears, walk as the enemies of the cross of Christ. Their end is destruction, their God is their belly, and their glory, they glory in their shame, with minds set on earthly things. False teachers. Now these are the same things that we can struggle with having conflict. We need to always understand and not get too discouraged. When we hear about a church struggling, you know, there's churches that are going to struggle, and at times, certainly in the past, certainly times in the future, we at Seven Oaks will struggle. There'll be times where there'll be conflict. And you may have a conflict with a brother or sister here at this congregation that I'm not even aware of. You may have just came through family, and you may be so thankful the holidays are over because you don't have to deal with any more conflict in your family, at least until the next big family gathering. You got till Easter that you have to worry about it again, because it's just family gatherings just, you know, cause you all kinds of anxiety because of all the tension and the conflict there. Let me give you a little encouragement. The early church dealt with it. Paul dealt with it. Preachers of the early church dealt with it. Good men. Barnabas, John Mark, Paul, Jesus, Euodia and Syntyche, good ladies who were part of the church there at Philippi that needed to agree in the Lord. And so false teachers that we're dealing with and false lessons and false doctrine out there that we have conflict with, church dealt with it then too. And so tonight I want to ask the question, how do we maintain or how to maintain joy despite conflict and tension? How do we maintain joy despite the conflict and tension that exists in the church or in the family, in our homes? And I have four ways. The first one is, and all these come from the book of Philippians, and they come kind of from the references we've just looked at. Go back to chapter 1, verse 18. So we're going to kind of retrace some of the ground we just covered, but now we're going to find the answer. We've already noticed the problem, now we're going to find the answer that Paul gives. The first one is, try to focus on a good outcome of the conflict. Look at verse 18. After talking about these preachers who preach Christ out of rivalry and selfish ambition and envy, Paul says, what then? You know, what do I do about it? I'm just throwing my hands up in the air. I'm in prison. I can't do anything about it. What do I do? This is an amazing statement. Only that in every way, whether in pretense or in truth, whether it's in falsehood, whether it's, you know, false motives, or whether it's in sincere motives, Christ is proclaimed, and in that I rejoice. Paul says, you know, they're trying to add harm to me. They're trying to take any glory they thought I had. They're doing it out of selfish reasons. And they're trying to inflict me pain. But Paul says, you know what? It's not going to hurt me. Because as long as they're preaching Jesus, even if their attitude is not the best in it, Jesus is proclaimed, and I will rejoice. You know, sometimes this one's tough to do. But I think the lesson is that sometimes we have to search hard, maybe that needle in a haystack. We have to try to figure out what is a good outcome that comes from this conflict. See, Paul was thankful and he was rejoicing because of the good that came. Maybe it's a closer relationship, as I was talking about in a marriage. You know, nobody likes to go through conflict. And maybe it's humility, maybe it's a close relationship, maybe it's intimacy, all kinds of things. But if you're going to grow, if you're going to mature, you're going to have conflict. You're going to have to. When I tell couples that I do premarital counseling with in the first session, that one of the purposes of that of those sessions is to, for me to try to create issues for them to discuss, and that it's very likely that they're going to have a little conflict. And my hope is that they will talk about these issues and be able to discuss them in a more calm setting, in a way that's ahead of time before the issues really hit them in life. Because there's going to be some issues that we have to deal with. And we can either grow through them and mature through them, or they'll break us. They'll break us. So we have to find the good outcome that can come. Try to see past the details and see the big picture. It's not always about the players. This is a key thought. It's not always about the players involved as much as it is about the events. The cause of Christ, the unity of our families, are bigger than a squabble and our personal opinions. Many times in the church, we will have a doctrinal issue that is said to, in the history of the church and in the history of local congregations. People say, well, it's some doctrinal issue that caused the division. Sometimes it is. But many times it is personalities that have taken a doctrinal issue to fuss and fight about because really they just want some issue to fight about because they don't like each other. And so they find some reason not to like that other person. And really it's a matter of an opinion, or it's a small issue that the church should be able to overlook because of the greater cause of Christ. And so we have to focus on the greater. I've been reading a really interesting book on the Wright brothers. And the Wright brothers fought regularly. And they were really ones who worked out their problems by constantly trying to challenge one another. And when one of them would have an idea, the other one was always quick to kind of come back and argue, well, that will not work. And they really kind of expected that. And if one just said, yeah, I think it's going to do that, well, they were shocked by that because they really refined and were able to reach their goals through constantly sharpening one another by always challenging one another. And the conflict eventually led to them discovering how to fly. And so we have to focus on the good. Number two, find people with whom you share oneness. Look back to chapter 2, verses 1 through 3. Paul says, complete my joy by being of the same mind, having the same love, being of full accord and of one mind. And back in chapter 1, verse 27, he says, only let your manner of life be worthy of the gospel of Christ, so that whether I come and see you or am absent, I may hear of you that you are standing firm in one spirit, with one mind, striving side by side for the faith of the gospel. Psalms 133 talks about how beautiful and how wonderful it is to dwell together in unity. You know, one thing that I think it's important to understand is that we need to conscientiously, intentionally find people that we agree with. Now, certainly we need to find at times people that can challenge us and that we can disagree on, maybe some things on that we may need to be challenged on, but we need to find the joy in being like-minded. If you're the person, if you are that person, you need to look at yourself, the person who is always the odd person, who's never able to get along with anybody, always causing problems. You need to look at yourself and consider your attitude and consider your defensiveness. Let me encourage you, encourage all of us, excuse me, to find people whom you can encourage, whom you can love, whom you can support, whom you have a like-minded nature with. Our church family, we need to have close friends, and we need to be able to share common doctrine and faith. You know, I think that if you're at a congregation, when you're people that are looking for a congregation, let's just say, they need to make sure they find a congregation that they can fully support that leadership, the views of the church, the doctrinal position of the church. They can have this like-minded unity. You know, I have a lot of friends in this community, and we can be good friends, and we can do things together, and we can do various activities. But there's still something lacking in our oneness, in our unity, if we don't share a like-minded faith. And I know you have many of the same situations, and people in our own families that are like that. But let me tell you something. You need to always make sure you have that group that you do share that like-minded faith with, because it's going to encourage you. It's going to help you go to a place where you can just relax and you can be yourself and you can just share in the joy of unity. And so, you know, it's important when people are looking for a congregation to make sure they find that. It's important for us to always want to work for that and to have that. And this is the reason we have fellowship meals and times of fellowship, to allow for that unity. As spouses, we need to be there to support and love our spouse. Paul told them had given this example of Epaphroditus and Timothy in chapter 2 of Philippians, and about how they were like-minded and about how much he shared and loved them because of that unity he had. Unity is a beautiful thing. Work for it and find people whom you can be united with. It means so much. Number 3, how to maintain joy despite conflict and tension. Number 3, keep some people at a safe distance. All right, there's some people that you really bring in. That's number 2. But number 3 is there's other people that if you want to make sure you have joy, you realize they are the kind of people that are always going to have conflict and tension surrounding them, and you need to keep them at a safe distance. Look at chapter 3, verses 2 and 3. Paul says, look out. Look out for the dogs. Look out for the evildoers. Look out for those who mutilate the flesh. He says, watch out. Look out. Now, the term dog is not the cute little house dog that you may have at home. This is the kind of dogs that you saw, those of you who went to El Salvador, that just roam the streets because, you know, there's not enough monetary means in the community to provide for pets. So these dogs just are scavengers that just roam out in the community and they just eat the scraps, and sometimes they can even be mean and dangerous to people in the community. Paul's talking about that kind of an image of a dog, more of like our coyotes or things like that. He's saying, you got to look out for these. They're dangerous to you. They mutilate the flesh. He's talking about false teachers. Now, when John comes around and preaches, John Dale likes to do a lesson, and he's done it here. And in that lesson, I don't know the exact title of the lesson, and he probably mentions it in different lessons, but he likes to talk about all of us have an elbow. I remember John talking about that. And that relationships should all be held with the elbow involved. And this issue of our arm represents our trust we have. And that we should allow people to get closer as they prove themselves trustworthy, and as they prove themselves dependable, and as they are someone that we need and want to have in our lives. But there are other people that we're going to have to interact with. We're going to have to be involved with. And we may have to even work with. We may even have to be connected with them in our family sometimes. But because of our experience with them, we know that if we allow them real close into our life, they're going to be bad on our mind, our heart, our choices. They're going to be manipulative. They're going to be controlling. They're going to be the victim in our life. And that we are going to be harmed and hurt if we allow them to be real close. And so God gave us an elbow. And there are some people that we need to look out. And we need to be maintaining a relationship. We need to do everything we can to maintain peace with them, but we do not have to allow them in here. We can have them out here. And that is very true with how we maintain joy despite conflict. Because at some point you have to say, I'm drawing some boundaries. I'm drawing some boundaries that are going to exist for my own safety and my own protection. And that Paul says, you've got to look out for these. He talks about that in verses 18 and 19, about these enemies of the cross. And all they care about is their selfish desires. He says their God is their belly. Somebody that's always wanting to use you and mistreat you, you've got to put up your elbow. You've got to put your arm up. So we got to keep some people at a safe distance. You can't get them out of your life. You certainly don't want to go to extremes that of anger and problems that would cause you to get in trouble. But you need to keep them at a safe distance. Number four, and this is the last one. This is chapter 4, verses 2 through 3. Get help to solve your conflict. I read verse 2 earlier about Euodia and Syntyche, but look at verse 3. Yes, I ask you also a true companion. Now, we don't know who the true companion is. Some think it's Timothy or Epaphroditus, or we don't know. But he says, I ask you, true companion, help these women who have labored side by side with me in the gospel together with Clement and the rest of my fellow workers whose names are in the book of life. Whoever the true companion is, Paul said, I want you to come alongside these ladies and help them. You be a mediator. In Matthew chapter 18, Jesus says that sometimes we need to get help to resolve our conflicts. In verse 15, he says, if you have a problem, you go to that person alone. You try to work that out. If you can't work it out, you go and take a friend with you and you try to work that out. And then if you still can't work it out with your friend, you tell it to the church. But what Jesus is saying is, he's saying a lot of things we won't get into, but one of the key things Jesus is saying is, get help. Use other people to help you work out your problem. Because that mediator can say, hey, you need to do this. And you need to do this. And sometimes I think Jesus is probably suggesting as well that when he says two or three witnesses, is that they should get their mediator and you should get your mediator and you go try to work it out. That way it's not two ganging up on one. But you work it out. You have someone to help. And so get help to resolve the conflict. And so Paul's guide to joy, this is, conflict is a part of our life, and it doesn't mean that it's a sinful thing. It often can be a good thing. But we need to handle conflict properly so it doesn't rob our joy. This evening, if you're struggling with conflict, and maybe you need the prayers of the church, or maybe you feel like there's tension or conflict with you in the church and you want to just make things right between you and the Lord, or between you and the congregation, we give you that opportunity. If you want to put Christ on in baptism and become a child of God, we would love to assist you in doing that this evening. Or if you want to rededicate your life, please come as together we stand and sing. God sent his Son.